Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Beyond the Shadowed Earth by Joanna Ruth Meyer. Narrated by Carissa Vacker. Prologue. Her father used to tell her the story on summer nights, the tall windows in their parlor flung wide, the tangy air blowing up from the sea.
Once there was a boy who made a deal with a god. It was centuries ago, far away in Halda, and the boy's name was Eris. He lived in a hut on the edge of a wood with his twin brother Kanar and their widowed mother. Eris was fiercely devoted to the gods and brought offerings to their altars every week. Kanar scoffed at Eris's beliefs and did not bring any. One day, an oracle came to the hut with the news that the gods had chosen Kanar to be Halda's first king. The boy's mother was overjoyed, and Kanar was quick to accept the declaration of the gods he did not believe in. He went to live in the glittering new palace on the top of a hill by a bright lake, and Eris stayed in the hut with their mother. In the winter, their mother fell ill and died, and Eris packed his few belongings and went to the palace on the hill. He thought Kanar would welcome him gladly, but Kanar had grown proud. He refused to acknowledge that Eris was his brother. He refused to acknowledge him at all. So Eris became a servant in the palace because he had nowhere else to go, and he thought in time Kanar would accept him. Kanar did not. Day after day, Eris saw him dressed in silk and dripping with jewels, the god's chosen king. And day after day, Eris's envy grew until he could no longer bear it. And so he left the palace and climbed up Tuor's mountain. Tuor was the first god to be formed on Endar and was said to be more powerful than all the other gods combined. Eris built an altar to Tuor and waited beside it for 9 scorching days and 9 freezing nights. On the 10th day, Tuor came, and he looked at Eris with deep sorrow. "What is it you wish of me, son of the dust?" "I wish to be king in place of my brother," Eris told him. "And what offering do you bring to me that I might grant your request?" "My devotion," said Eris. "That is not enough," said the god. "My life, then. What good is it to be king if you are dead?" Eris thought. "My brother's life. He was chosen by the gods already. His life is not yours to give." "What is mine to give?" "Your soul," said the god. "Your time. Your heart." "Take them freely," said Eris.
Ida always interrupted the story at this point. "Why would he give those things up so quickly?"
"Because he was a fool," her father said, "and because his hatred blinded him." "Very well," said the god, "if you are certain." And he spoke a word of power that burned into Eris's forehead. Eris went down the mountain again. When he returned to the palace, he was astonished to find the walls crumbled away, reduced to ancient weathered stones scattered in the grass. He wandered a while among the ruins until he came upon a child with a shepherd's crook.
"What happened here?" asked Eris.
"This was the palace of a mighty king centuries ago," said the child. "But there is no king here anymore. Oh, I see you are king." And Eris reached up to find a crown upon his head.
"Here," said the child, "I shall make you a throne."
He piled up stones and laid leaves on them for a cushion. Eris sat. He was bewildered, but felt neither loss, nor anger, nor sorrow, for he had given away his heart and was incapable of feeling anything.
"Long may you rule," said the child.
Then he bowed and went away. Eris sat on the makeshift throne as night fell, and dawn came again. He sat as the seasons changed from fall to winter to spring. He sat as the centuries spun away, and he did not age, and he did not die, for he had given away his soul and his time. And there he sits still, the king of nothing, the ruler of emptiness.
It doesn't seem very fair, Ida always said when her father finished the story. He was only jealous of his brother.
But he should not have made such a reckless deal with Tuor,
her father told her gravely.
The gods are bound by the one who formed them to fulfill their oaths and honor their promises.
Is there no way to free him?
Perhaps there is a way, and perhaps he found it in the end.
I hope so, said Ida. I don't like to think of him sitting there even now.
One must always take care when treating with gods,
said her father.
It might not be worth the risk.
Which is why, when Ida was 9 years old and made a deal of her own, she took very meticulous care. After all, her parents were dead, and there was no one to look out for her but herself. Part 1. Stone and Crown. Long ago, when the world was young but not quite new, a man dared stand against a god, and the god struck him down. Chapter 1. Ida swore. Rain pounded sharp outside the open window of the council chamber, a gust of wind whipping aside the gauzy curtain to display the sprawling city below the palace. Blue-tiled roofs, silver-spired towers, a maze of stone streets, all were as familiar to Ida as breathing, all gleaming wet in the rain. Bells clamored from the spires, warning of the storm that was already here. She swore again, with heat.
Is something wrong, Your Imperial Majesty?
The Baron of Teist blinked at her from his place midway down the polished ironwood table. He'd been droning on and on for the last quarter hour, to the rapt attention of her other barons and assorted nobility, but the sandalwood oil drenching his stubby beard was so distractingly potent, she hardly knew what he was saying. The courtiers had barely listened to the young steamship engineer she'd brought in to address them earlier. He now sat on her right, looking for all the world like a scrawny, cornered rat. Ida reminded herself of all the reasons she shouldn't strangle the Baron of Teist, and reined in her irritation. I fear the rain might delay temple construction. The Baron's eyes shifted away from hers, and Ida glanced down the length of the table to find most of her barons unwilling to meet her gaze. All except for Reskarin Hena Ar, Baron of Ivala. He sat opposite the Baron of Teist, his arms folded across his chest. Reskarin was somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 and more elaborately dressed than anyone else in the room. His jaw was smooth. His dark eyes filled simultaneously with laughter and disdain.
Construction is already delayed, Your Imperial Majesty.
Ida's whole body went cold. Why? Her voice was low, dangerous. Reskarin raised his eyebrows as if daring her to react further.
We've used all the stone. There can be no further progress until the next shipment arrives from Halda.
That is absurd. The plans for the temple haven't changed. We ordered the correct amount of stone. There should have been enough. Reskarin had the audacity to shrug.
We can't produce building materials out of thin air, Your Imperial Majesty. Halda wasn't able to send it all in one shipment, and the second one has been delayed.
It took all Ida's willpower to keep herself from lunging across the table, dagger in hand. Gods, how she hated him. Induna was made up of 6 provinces, 5 under command of barons, the 6th under direct imperial control. Each province had its own army, ostensibly to protect itself, but also to temper the power of the emperor or empress. Most of the barons ruled their provinces as a kingdom unto themselves, and the 2 most powerful provinces, Ivala and Teist, kept the firmest check on the imperial seat, as well as keeping a check on each other. Reskaren had been governing Ivala ever since he made himself regent when Ida's parents had died. He was respected by the other barons, and any attempt to replace him would have caused an uproar she was not equipped to handle. She had the loyalty of the imperial army, but it was not a large enough force to subdue all of her barons and their armies at once. It was a delicate, maddening balance. She needed the barons to support her in order to remain in control, and they begrudgingly gave her their support to avoid the all-out civil war that would ensue if they got rid of her altogether. And so, when Ida ascended the throne, she'd made Reskaren a baron, which was higher than her parents' former ranks of count and countess. She'd also officially given him the governorship of Ivala, with the understanding that he would drastically reduce the size of Ivala's military. That was one thing the other barons had wholeheartedly supported her in. They didn't like the threat of Ivala's army any more than she did. Reskaren had agreed to her terms and disbanded half of his army. But his power in the capital still held nearly as much sway as hers, so she was left with these endless council sessions, pretending she was wholly in charge, when everyone in the room knew she was really not. "How long until the next shipment arrives?" Ida asked through gritted teeth.
"Could be half a year."
"God's damn." Her barons and other courtiers shifted uncomfortably, but Ida didn't care. She touched the elaborate gold filigree cuff that circled the length of her left forearm, trying to focus her anger. She'd had the cuff made shortly after her coronation, a replica of one thought to have been worn by Kata, goddess of fire, millennia ago. Ida wished she had an ounce of Kata's power. She could turn these fools to cinders with an eye blink. She glanced at the young woman with the oval-shaped face and large eyes seated near the back of the room. Nirin Eris Dalryl, Marquess of Dias, who had the esteemed honor of being the only person alive that Ida actually liked. Diamonds hung heavy in Nirin's ears and at her throat, gleaming against her rich bronze skin. No one looking at her would have guessed she'd been a sheep farmer a year ago. Nirin regarded Ida with a wry, quiet humor. She gave the slightest shake of her head, lips twitching, and Ida understood her meaning. "Why are you being so fanatical about your ridiculous temple?" But Nirin didn't know everything. Ida refocused on Reskaren. "The temple must be finished by the Festival of Uruk. Construction will move forward. Find the stone somewhere else." Reskaren tapped his fingers against his etched metal wine cup and didn't bother hiding his eye roll.
"The royal treasury is depleted enough as it is. There's no money to obtain stone elsewhere, even if it could be found. Wait for the shipment."
Domin Odar Duin, Baron of Idair, squirmed in his seat. He might one day prove to be handsome, but at present he was gangly as a cricket and couldn't grow a beard. At 16, he was the youngest courtier among them and rarely spoke up during council sessions. But he spoke now, very quietly.
"No one wants a temple anyway, Your Imperial Majesty. If the gods ever existed at all, they've long since stopped caring for the people of Endar. They don't need us, and we don't need them.
You're wrong, said Ida coolly. It is high time Indunans resumed our devotion to the gods. Only a fool would deny their very existence. Outside, the storm was getting worse. A gust of wind blew the rain in, and an attendant went to shut the window.
The new temple has been a foolish endeavor from the start, Reskarin said. He took a swig of his wine and then frowned into the bottom of his now empty glass.
The attendant, who had shut the window, hurried over and refilled it.
We have the old palace temple. That should be enough.
Ida curled her hands into fists, nails digging into her palms. The temple he referred to was in an ancient wing of the palace and hadn't been in use for nearly a century. She'd wandered there often as a child, drinking in the murals of the nine gods painted by some long-dead artist's brush, mourning the cracks in the plaster, the crumbling walls and sagging roof. There was an altar at the back of the room, the stone worn smooth from several millennia of royal offerings. Cobwebs and dust were its only supplicants now, joined by the odd sack or two of grain when extra storage was needed.
I am not offering the gods an old ruined temple to mark Induna's return to devotion.
Reskarin sighed, like he was dealing with the nine-year-old child he clearly still saw her as.
Your Majesty, the late Emperor abolished religious practices for a reason. Trying to reinstate them is troublesome at best. Forget the temple.
She ground her jaw, ready to put Reskarin in his place despite the consequences. But then she looked at Niren, saw the crease of concern in her friend's forehead, and forced herself to appear outwardly calm.
As I have told you many times, Baron Reskarin, that is not for you to decide.
She fixed her eyes on each of her barons in turn. The temple will be built before the year is out. The money for the stone will come out of your province's treasuries, and if there is none to be found, you will tear apart your own cities and use that.
Reskarin shook his head.
Your Majesty, your Imperial Majesty, she spat at him. I am your Empress, and I will have your respect.
It was a daring move, reprimanding him in front of the others. For a moment, Reskarin didn't react or respond. Then he gave her a small, mocking smile and dipped his head in the semblance of a bow.
Reva's beating heart. Ida wished she could eviscerate him.
She took a breath and settled deeper into her chair.
As for the matter Baron Lonin has been speaking about so eloquently,
she glanced at the Baron of Teist and thought she could practically see his beard dripping oil.
We will not be pursuing a treaty with Denlin. We will continue to arm ourselves against them and prepare to conquer them for the glory of the Empire.
40 years ago, the late Emperor, bent on expanding his domain, had sent an army by ship to conquer Denlin. He'd thought it would be easy, like conquering the island province Rhine had been. But Denlin was filled with trained warriors, as Rhine was not, and the attack on Denlin ended in slaughter. Induna suffered heavy losses and took decades to recover. There had been no further attacks after that first one on either side, but the Emperor had spent the rest of his reign arming Induna against Denlin and plotting ways to take over the enemy nation. Ida meant to finish what he'd started all those years ago, but she was going to do it properly. She wasn't about to repeat the Emperor's mistake. When she'd conquered Denlin, she'd build temples there too, and bring their people back to the gods.
That's exactly why I brought my steamship engineer to speak with you all this morning, or were you not listening to his detailed explanation, Your Grace?
Ida nodded at the engineer, who nervously adjusted his spectacles and stood up to go over his plans again. But Baron Lonin frowned and waved him back into his seat before he could even open his mouth.
These new ships are untested. They will work.
Ida bristled at the dismissal of her engineer. The steamers will be more than twice as fast as your outdated sailing ships. They will enable the Empire and our religion to spread quickly.
Baron Lonin flicked his dark eyes to the other courtiers around the table as if to see,
you see how unreasonable she is.
Ida tried not to grind her teeth.
If you would consider a treaty, said Reskaren in that bored-sounding tone she hated so much.
A treaty is not what we're here to discuss. Ida jerked from her seat, barely reining herself in. None of her courtiers stood out of respect for her, as etiquette dictated. They just sat there, staring carefully past her. But Reskaren locked eyes with her.
I wonder why you hold these sessions at all, Your Imperial Majesty, if you have no intention of listening to your counselor's advice.
And I wonder, Your Grace, why you bother coming to them, since you always do exactly as you please. Outside, the rain fell harder, sharp as stones on the tile roof. Lightning flashed, and thunder answered with a resounding crack that shook the whole palace. Ida's eyes were drawn to the foot of the table, where a figure stood suddenly beside Niren, its clothes or body made of rippling shadow. Ida stared, horror freezing her in place. For a moment, the figure raised its head, fixing Ida with those shining eyes she remembered so well from her childhood. Tuor. The god's name dropped from her lips in the barest whisper. He didn't speak, just touched Niren's brow with one shadowy hand. Niren's forehead creased in pain, and Ida cried out and leapt toward her. But then she blinked, and the shadow god was gone. She stood trembling in the center of the council chamber, rain pounding on outside the shuttered window, lamps flaming orange from their wall sconces. All the courtiers were staring at her. Ida didn't care. She couldn't take her eyes off of Niren, off the faint, shadowy marks that lingered on her friend's forehead where the god had touched her. Dread pooled in Ida's stomach, a terror awakening that had never been real to her until this moment. How long since the stone ran out? She asked quietly, to no one in particular.
Your Imperial Majesty,
said Domin, the youngest baron, confused she would go back to harping on the temple at this moment.
How long? She shrieked. What's wrong, Your Imperial Majesty? Asked Niren. Sweat was beating on her brow, though she didn't seem to notice.
Construction stopped yesterday, offered the Baron of Teist. Does it matter?
Why didn't you tell me?
Ida demanded, trying and failing to conceal her panic.
Why didn't you tell me?
She couldn't look away from the marks on Niren's forehead, the spots of shadow sinking into her.
Gods, gods, gods.
Ida hadn't thought this would happen so soon. She hadn't thought it would happen at all. She'd thought Tuor would give her more time. They discussed her fate like she was a hound or a chair, to be put aside and forgotten. They didn't even wait until her parents' burial. She stood outside her father's office the night after they died, listening like the shadow they thought she was. Lamplight flickered orange in the hall, shadows dancing. Her nightgown hung off her thin form, overlarge since the illness that had taken her parents, but not her. She trembled, even though the air was warm, and put her ear to the door.
She can't inherit, that much is obvious. A regent, then.
But who?
I know you're itching for the job, Reskaren.
I'm a cousin of a sort. It makes sense. We'll take it to the Emperor. But you'll support me. If you'll keep the size of my army from him. You know that's treasonous, Lonan. They both laughed, and she didn't understand how anyone could laugh when her parents lay as cold as marble 2 rooms away. But what to do with the girl? Asked Lonan. It doesn't matter. We have to do something with her. We can't just throw her out in the desert and forget about her entirely. More laughter. Take her back to Edinar with you, said Riscaran. Find her a nursemaid. Now you're not coming back at all. Someone has to put Ivala's affairs in order. If I'm to be regent, that isn't decided yet. You know it is. Fine, I'll take the girl with me. What are we to tell her? That's when Ida shoved the door open and marched into the room, so horribly, horribly angry that tears were pouring down her face. They didn't interpret her tears correctly. Riscaran knelt down to make himself her height and took her small hand in both his large ones. Poor child is distraught, Lonan, you see.
I'm not a child,
she shouted, or at least she meant to shout. The words came out all strangled and damp. Riscaran laughed a little and patted her head.
You have nothing to worry about, you know. It's off to Edinar tomorrow. Won't that be grand?
I don't want to go to Edinar. I want to stay here.
You can't,
said Lonan, stacking papers neatly on her father's desk, then kneeling beside her and Riscaran.
Your parents are gone, and there's no one to look after you.
I can look after myself. I'm to inherit Ivala. My father told me.
You're not inheriting anything. Best to get to bed now. You've a long journey ahead of you in the morning.
I want to stay here.
Ida kicked Riscaran in the shin as hard as she could, and he howled and jumped backward, knocking his head against the desk. She saw the rage come into his face, but she wasn't expecting the blow. A sharp, stinging slap across her cheek. She gaped at him, so angry she could barely breathe.
Get her out of here, snapped Riscaran.
Lonan grabbed her arm and yanked her from her father's office, dragging her all the way back to her bedroom. Ida didn't sleep. She waited until Lonan's footsteps faded, and then crept down the hall to the room where her parents' bodies lay. She sat between them all that night, praying to the gods that it was all a mistake, that both of them would stir and open their eyes and come back to her, make everything right. But they didn't. They just lay there, dead, dead, dead. In the morning, Lonan put her in a carriage bound for Edinar. That was the day she decided she would become Empress. The last day someone other than herself would command her own fate. Chapter 2. Ida climbed the hill in the torrential rain, the normally dusty road a swirl of sucking mud beneath her feet. Rain ran into her eyes and plastered her clothes to her body. She hadn't brought a canopy or a cloak. She wanted to feel the full weight of the god's storm. Dread had seized hold of her in the council chamber and wouldn't let go. How much time did she have before the gods took what she had promised them? A pair of guards trailed up the hill behind her. There were always guards. That was the price she paid for being empress of half the known world. Never any privacy, not even the illusion of it. She was grateful for the loyalty of the imperial army, comforted by the fact that she had an entire garrison of soldiers at her command just outside the city. Still, the lack of privacy, even though it ensured her safety, grated on her. The place of kings loomed ahead. Edinar's ancient royal burial ground, built on top of an even...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?